Welcome to Memory Static for our very first mini episode. It's me, Bailey Moore, and
me, Eric Dumig.
So we are finally getting to those mini episodes we teased at the beginning of the season. And we're going to be covering old TV specials that are too short to warrant a full swing screening event. And because we are all stuck at home, the selected specials will all be easily accessible for you to check out. So the format of the mini episodes are going to be a bit different, right, Eric?
Yeah. They're going to be a little different.
For one, we are not in the same space.
No.
We are talking through the computer, so we can't really use the time machine. And even if we could, it would sort of be impractical for our situation.
Yes.
Like, moving slightly faster than real time really isn't going to do much for us.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we could use it to get to the end of this lockdown, like just move a little slightly faster and just get to the part where we don't have to stay at home anymore. But, you know, I don't think it's going to work that way.
I don't think so either, because even if we were in the time machine right now and moving slightly faster, we'd still have the same issues of finding what to do with ourselves.
Oh, we definitely would. Also, I don't know that I want to spend that much time in the time machine. Long-term exposure still hasn't been tested, you know, adequately for side effects.
That is also true.
You know, we haven't really done something like that. So we're just going to keep it at that. We're not going to zoom through this thing.
No, but we are going to zoom.
Yeah, we're zooming right now. Oh yeah, have you seen that meme on the internet that's like the image from Scooby-Doo, and it's like Fred like demasking a villain, and it's like, let's see who's behind all this COVID-19 stuff, and then like takes the mask off and it's the Zoom logo underneath. No. that's like my second favorite COVID meme right now. I think my favorite COVID meme is the one where it's just like an image of like a really regular like strip mall, like with some stuff in it. And it says, hey guys, you remember Places?
So what have you been doing during shelter in place?
Oh, I've been playing some Animal Crossing. I've been doing a fair bit of reading. I've started exercising a little bit and going on a lot of walks. I've like marked out all of the spots in my neighborhood right now that have like big jasmine bushes, because it's jasmine season. So that's like, those are like the nice spots to walk by, because you get that big old whiff of jasmine and it's just like, yum.
That is nice.
Yeah. So that's mostly what I've been doing. What have you been up to?
Well, it's been pretty crazy for me for a little, I mean, it's crazy for everyone, but I was in the middle of moving when everything started, which was a very intense experience and super surreal when you can drive down I-35 in the middle of the day and not hit any traffic.
Right. Must be crazy living in LA right now.
Like, you
can get to the airport in like 20 minutes. It's like, what?
Yeah. It feels like the end of the world. But, I also have had these like weird medical issues, or I've had to go to the doctor 3 times, which is always unnerving.
Oh no.
But just this past week, my eye swelled shut.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's weird.
Was it an allergic reaction, or like what happened?
Yeah. It was an allergic reaction.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it's mostly better.
Yeah. I can't tell.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are recording this in the middle of April, which is halfway to what?
Halfway to Halloween. Yeah. Oh, is the half-a-ween thing. Didn't we do that this time last year? Yeah.
We did. We did. I mean, this might be airing later than well,
yeah, I don't know when we'll post this, but probably not that long from now. I mean, we don't really have anything else to go up. I mean, well, I guess we've got the new episode coming out soon. Yes.
So I thought that this first series of mini episodes could focus on something spooky, which is sort of my go-to anyway.
Yeah.
So way back in the first season of Memory Static, I'm sure you remember, we covered a bit of what was happening with Disney in the 70s after Walt Disney died, and going into the 80s before Michael Eisner stepped in. Do you remember some of the episodes where we might have talked about that?
with Disney and Eisner. Well, we talked about that definitely with Mr. Boogity.
Yes.
Like we definitely hit on Disney's legacy with Mr. Boogity. I don't think we got quite up to the point of Eisner in the 80s while we were talking about the Disney animator strike during the Gay Paris episode.
No, that was way early.
Yeah, it was way early. But yeah.
So we also talked about Disney and Watcher in the Woods. Yeah, you got it. And The Secret of Nim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, not so much in Mr. Boogity, but The Watcher in the Woods and The Secret of Nim, if you at home want to get some more context for what we're about to talk about, that will kind of like give a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. But to summarize, with the concept of the family movie declining, Disney was struggling to establish a new audience in the changing culture. They experimented with different genre films to try to appeal to an older audience, like with Watcher in the Woods, but had very little success in these attempts. Its animation department in particular was stagnating, which is why Don Bluth and a group of animators quit Disney to work on The Secret of Nim independently. This all sounding familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But right as Don Bluth was leaving, Disney Studios was recruiting several promising new animators from Cal Arts, including John Lasseter, the future head of Pixar,
mm-hmm.
Brad Bird, the director of The Iron Giant and Ratatouille.
And The Incredibles.
Yeah, and The Incredibles. And the spooky creative mind of the future director I'll be focusing on for this first series of mini episodes. Fanfare, if you please. Tim Burton!
Nice.
So, it's likely that most of you listeners are aware that Tim Burton was eventually fired from Disney and later welcomed back with a warm embrace once he had established himself as a celebrated director. But over this three-part series, we are going to tell the story of how this event took place through the three features Tim Burton directed while working for Disney between 1981 and 1985. The first of these three is a five-minute stop-motion animation titled Vincent, which, as promised, you can find on YouTube.
Mm. So not feature, shorts, short films.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gotcha. So this is a really, really fast movie. 5 minutes.
Yes, 5 minutes.
Cool. Sweet. Vincent.
Just simple.
Nice.
So Tim Burton originally caught the attention of Disney talent scouts with a short hand-drawn animation called Stalk of the Celery Monster. And only fragments of this short animation still exist, and only parts of those fragments have sound. But what still exists can also be viewed on YouTube. From what I can tell, it's about a mad scientist assisted by a celery monster who are experimenting on a young woman who is strapped to a propped-up gurney. And once the experiment is completed, it's revealed that this mad scientist is some sort of doctor, and there are a bunch of other women patiently awaiting his appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Burton's trademark style and character design is already apparent in this short, with the mad scientist kind of looking like that character from Nightmare on Elm Street. Not Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Which character? Okay.
No, I haven't seen this short, so.
Well, it's the mad scientist guy.
Oh, the mad scientist guy.
Dr. Finkelstein.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's dark. It's a dark and demented little animation. It's kind of what we expect from Tim Burton.
Sure.
But it seems like Disney, despite having noticed him for this movie or this little short, they brought him in wanting him to play by their rules, which inevitably did not work out.
Yeah.
Apparently, he worked as a concept artist on Fox and the Hound, Tron, and The Black Cauldron, but none of his concepts made it into the films as his drafts were too dark and disturbing.
Oh, man.
And have you ever seen
Black Cauldron? I mean, I've seen all three of those movies. Yeah, Black Cauldron gets kind of dark at points for sure.
It's pretty dark and disturbing. I mean,
it's pretty weird. That's the one with the pig, right? Like,
I think so. And there's a bunch of like skeletons and green flames.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one in a minute. Tron is awesome, though.
Tron is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, despite this, Tim Burton was not without his supporters. Disney executive Julie Hickson and head of creative development Tom Wilhite while they acknowledged that Tim Burton's talents did not necessarily fit the Disney mold, they thought he should get to develop one of his original ideas. Mm-hmm. So kind of like separate from all the other major projects going on, they gave him $60,000 to adapt one of his poems that was originally intended to be a children's picture book.
Hmm.
And the poem is titled Vincent and is about a little boy that idealizes the macabre personas that Vincent Price portrays in his B-horror movies.
Oh, cool. Nice. Perfect. Perfect for the very on brand.
Yeah. And you have not watched this yet.
No.
Yeah. I'm excited for you.
Did
to
they
see
get
it.
Vincent Price to voice Vincent? Because that would be awesome.
Yes, oh, they actually what? Did.
That's awesome. Sick. Perfect.
You guessed
awesome.
It.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's so cool. Yes. Yes.
It's the best. It is the best. Okay. We'll get there.
Is it really a Vincent Price thing without Vincent Price's voice? Like, nah.
No, it couldn't be. So Tim Burton developed the adaptation of his poem with Rick Heinrichs, mm-hmm. who got his start by designing the Otherworld sequence that was tossed from the theatrical cut of The Watcher in the Woods.
Oh, whoa.
Which was Disney's first horror film. So it seems like a pretty great team up. So the whole project was completed in 2 months and was shot to evoke the style of 1920s German expressionist films. So you already know that Vincent Price narrates the short film, mm-hmm. but that collaboration led to a friendship between Tim Burton and Vincent Price that lasted until his death.
That and, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Edward Scissorhands too.
Yeah.
And Vincent Price at one point recalled that being involved in Vincent was one of the most gratifying things of his career, and that it was better than a star on the Hollywood Boulevard.
Nice.
I mean, it's got to feel pretty good if someone
the star
like,
on the Hollywood Boulevard. I don't know. I have like a weird relationship with that. I feel like it's like, I don't know. It's so cheesy. And I spend a lot of time in LA because my twin lives in LA. But mm-hmm. like that whole like walk of fame is just so cheesy. And just the people who have been selected to be on there. I mean, it's just all the, like Donald Trump has a fucking star, you know? Like,
well, then it is a lot better than a star on the Hollywood Boulevard. I mean, I think that he felt like he was immortalized by this mm-hmm. short film because it was someone that appreciated his work, his body of work as mm-hmm. as the horror man.
Right. But then also can so expand on that in like a really idiosyncratic way in the way that Tim Burton can. You know, I think there's something really special about having your art or your work influence somebody whose work in and of itself is so drastically different and unique. And seeing something that you contributed to remixed in that way is really fascinating, you know, yeah. And I have to believe feels very cool and gratifying.
Right. Well, especially at that time, no one had seen, like, Tim Burton hadn't done any of the other stop motion animated things that he would go on to do. Mm-hmm. So it was all completely new.
Right.
Very yeah. distinct style.
Yeah. That's neat that it was so apparent so early and not, you know, something that took several projects to really come into its own.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that you will see, like when you watch it, you will notice certain things that are kind of evocative of Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah.
And Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah. I felt this same way about a pair of directors, the Wachowskis. Like, have you ever seen their first movie, Bound?
Mm-mm.
It's really good. You should watch it. But there are straight up shots in that movie that are almost completely reused in The Matrix. And
really?
It's so awesome because it's like, it's really cool how in Bound, which had a much, much lower budget than The Matrix movies, you know, they pulled off like the best they could. And then with The Matrix, they were given this really nice Hollywood budget. And they redid a lot of these shots or close approximations of them. Things like when they first are in the Matrix and like looking down the staircases, and there's that like white and black checkered floor, and the camera's kind of spinning like this. Like they use that in Bound, which mostly takes place in a hotel. And it's really neat. It's just really neat. Like all of the, they kind of hint at that kind of gothic industrial style that kind of came out of like queer rave culture in the 90s in Chicago. Yeah, it's really neat to just see like the prototypes, you know?
Absolutely. It's interesting to watch someone's art evolve over time, but also see a common thread that has continued to be explored or born from.
Totally. You know?
So Vincent was originally screened at film festivals, and it received a lot of praise, and it won 3 different awards. But to the general public, it was only shown for 2 weeks before the feature film Text in LA, before it was hidden away within the Disney vaults. Only 2 weeks. Yeah, and it wasn't seen again until it was released as bonus material in the 2008 Nightmare Before Christmas DVD.
See, yeah, that's so interesting, because I think that's something that, like, you know, is a product of its time, that it really shows how different things are now. Like, because a 5-minute short can live forever accessible on YouTube now, you know, but that wasn't the case in the 1980s, you know. Even at that point, like, replication of film into a physical medium was still very much the reality. You know, you needed to, even to have it shown at theaters, you needed to create reels, you know, for people to watch. Whereas now, you know, distributions are digital distributions. You know, it's just, you have a file. It can be copied and sent.
Well, I think it's strange that Disney never aired it on the Disney Channel at all during that whole time, because there were other things that he did do, like Frankenweenie. And Nightmare Before Christmas, you know, once Disney became involved with him again, those things were aired around Halloween or whatever, but they never brought Vincent back until that DVD.
And with such star talent like Vincent Price.
Yeah.
You know, such a recognizable voice for the 80s, and even like, you know, long after his death, his voice is still very recognizizable.
Yes, it's an amazing voice.
It's wonderful. Yeah, it's really, really iconic.
Every time I happen to hear him in something, it makes me really excited. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, everybody knows he does the voice in Thriller.
Right.
He also does the voice in the Alice Cooper song, Welcome to My Nightmare, something on there. Mm-hmm. And then he also does a voice in a Scooby-Doo cartoon and stuff. It's just like always, like, you know exactly who it is.
Yeah.
But this is how I first saw it, was on that DVD, which, you know, that I love Vincent Price.
Yes, I do.
And did I ever tell you the story about how when I first went to college in 2003, the first tidbit that I learned about local celebrities was that Vincent Price's daughter lived in Santa Fe?
No, I didn't know that.
I had to, like, consciously tell myself, you will not stalk Vincent Price's daughter. And then after I graduated, I returned with a friend to visit, and she took me over to a friend of hers to, like, have tea at his house. And when he handed me the tea, he told me, "So that white couch you're sitting on belonged to Vincent Price."
Whoa.
I got it from his daughter, and I started crying into my cup of tea.
Oh, wow.
So, like, when I first saw this movie, this short film, when I was, like, digging through the special features of Nightmare Before Christmas DVD, I felt like I found something that was made for me. You know that feeling?
Yeah.
So you can find Vincent pretty easily, like I said, on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to add before you get to see it?
I don't think so. I'm ready to go. Let's watch this movie.
Okay, so you at home, pause here, watch it. It won't take very much time out of your life, and then join back in with the party.
Hi, I'm Bailey.
And I'm Chaney.
And we're sisters.
And we're here to tell you about our brand new podcast called Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts.
It is a comedy podcast that celebrates women in film by exploring their catalog of work. Each 5-part series will feature a different woman working in the film industry.
we both will draw two genres at random, so four genres altogether.
Then, each episode, we'll alternate who picks the movie based on one of the genres that we've drawn.
We'll watch the movie and then we'll talk about it along with fun facts about our featured sweetheart.
Oh, and the fifth episode of each series is Listener's Choice.
That's you.
I think that about covers it.
That's what the script says.
Great.
So stay tuned.
We'll be coming to your favorite podcast platform soon.
Bye.
Here we are with our Zoom party.
Yeah, Zoom party.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for our first attempt with our quarantine episodes of Memory Static. So we have with us right now Chaney Moore from the Frog Prince episode.
Hello. Woo.
Haley Clement from the Baron Munchausen episode.
Hello. Woo.
Kathy Moore from House on Haunted Hill.
Woo.
Kate Windsor from Phantom Tollbooth.
Woo.
El Cuddy from the Lost Boys.
Hello.
Cullen Moore, who writes all of the music for the podcast.
Yeah!
That's me. Hi.
And Tim Moore, who's standing in for his friend, the skeleton, from episode one of the season.
You're here.
So, we've all watched Vincent?
Yes.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Had anyone ever seen this before?
Nope.
I have not.
Cool.
No.
Wow.
So, what did you think?
It was cute.
Very Tim Burton.
Very Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really likes dead dogs.
Yeah, I felt so bad for Abercrombie.
I know. Abercrombie got so, the short end of that stick.
Yeah.
He just turned into a crazy Beetlejuice dog.
That's sad.
I was a little disturbed by it. Just a little bit. There was a part where he talks about dipping his aunt into a vat of hot wax, mm-hmm. and the night before I watched House of Wax, so it got so much darker because of that.
I like that they only used the sound effect of him actually dropping her in the wax. It just held on Vincent. It didn't actually show it.
Yeah, you know, before that moment, it's only just like this affectation that he wants to achieve. Right. But then that moment is like these super dark thoughts. Mm. But like, yes, Auntie, I'm glad you're here.
I think that the whole short did a really good job of like escalating his overactive animation imagination, making it more and more seeping into reality.
Well, is imagination what you'd call it? Depression?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it as well.
I
like how the character wants to be sad in dark hallways. Like that's his dream, to be like Vincent Price and be sad in dark hallways.
And to contemplate life. And
I thought that Vincent did a very poor job in dunking his aunt. you wouldn't just let something plop into the wax.
True.
Not enough finesse.
I know this probably is a little twisted, but I love the way her little feet just kind of wiggled the whole time.
Yeah.
I liked that too.
Yeah, when it comes down, a claw machine picks her up. And then...
Yep.
I will say that the amount of checkered backgrounds and floors, black and white checkered backgrounds, floor, off the charts as per usual with Tim Burton. Very good.
Yeah, and that when he was actually going crazy and doing the kind of blurry landscapes, I thought that was very appropriate as well.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone else notice how weird Vincent's mother's arms looked?
No.
When she came in and reprimanded him, it was
she's pointing over and over again.
Her arms look like they are that of a 150-year-old woman. They're
twigs.
So wrinkly skinny. And
I did not notice that.
Yeah, it's weird. Mm-hmm. They're textured. She has textured arms.
Well, maybe that was the way he saw her.
Maybe.
She's alien. She's so old.
She's a reptile.
I'm wondering how much of this is Tim Burton's recollection of his own childhood.
That would explain a lot.
I did read some stuff that he drew upon a lot from his own childhood. for this.
Not surprising.
That's spooky.
Yeah, he was
looking for dead bodies.
Didn't he like grow up next to a graveyard? I remember reading that somewhere.
What did you say, Haley?
Oh, I said he was a little baby goth.
A little baby goth.
Like yearning for sadness. I really wanted to make fun of that kid, but then when they mentioned like reading Poe, I was like, shit.
So I like that too, damn.
Yeah, I went through that phase in middle school.
Oh, most definitely. Like read all of his poems. I think Barnes & Noble put out this like series of collections of like, you know, the classic writers that like they make you read in high school. And I got this big one of Poe and read like all of his poems and a bunch of his short stories like in seventh grade or something, and thought it was so cool.
That's about the same time that I became aware of Edgar Allan Poe too. I mean, other than the Vincent Price movies that I'd seen, but I think that was the first time that I read any of them.
They introduced that in middle school with the Telltale Heart.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Sixth grade. Yeah. They did.
Yeah.
And we used to have albums that the teachers would play, and we'd listen the whole the Castle of Amontillado and all those by record.
Cool.
That was awesome.
I think I read all of Poe in middle school, but I don't think I ever considered dropping my aunt into a vat of acid.
You must have liked your aunt.
What?
I remember watching the Tiny Toon cartoon where it covered Telltale Heart, and it was
the Telltale Vacuum.
The Telltale Vacuum. Yep.
What? I have not
remember
seen
that
this.
Too.
Yes. It's so good.
It was a classic. It was a classic. Yeah. But was anybody else as disturbed by that as I was?
The Telltale Vacuum, or
no? Yeah. I mean, how do you character? What genre is this? Or is Tim Burton his own genre?
I think that this was considered Disney's second horror thing.
Yeah, at this point, I would say Tim Burton has kind of become, like, his style has been become salient as its own genre almost now. But at the time, it's like, I guess, like, he taps into a lot of, like, German expressionist stuff and then just really... I don't know if this came before Tim Burton, but there's some elements to his style that remind me of the artwork of, I think his name's Lane Smith. He made the Stinky Cheese Man.
Yeah.
Like gets kind of into that realm of like the teeth, especially like with his like Beetlejuice dog teeth. Like that kind of reminds me of that.
There was a puppet in Vincent that reminded me of the sandworms in Beetlejuice.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also the snake that lives under the bed in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you mentioned how the cat was the same in every movie.
It looks a lot like the cat from Coraline.
Yes, it does. I didn't make that connection, but you're totally right. But
what if there's just some overarching theme in every Burton movie? It's like, because cats have nine lives, so it's always the same cat.
But Tim Burton didn't direct Coraline.
I don't believe Tim Burton was involved in Coraline. I want to say...
It looks like he was, though.
It does. It does look like he was. I want to say that was Leica Studios that did Coraline up in... I think they're in Portland. They've done like some other stuff since then, but I want to say that's them, not Tim Burton.
And Cullen, I looked it up. He grew up with his parents in a suburban neighborhood, but he found solace in the cemetery down the street. Mm.
That makes sense.
Lovely.
That sounds very Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. Jumping off the cat thing, I heard there's a theory with the dog that like all of the stories with the dog, like all the Tim Burton stories with the dog, it's the same dog, just like one of them's when the dog's alive, and then one's like when it's dead, and one's when it's a ghost. I don't super remember.
Oh,
yeah, right. Like in like Nightmare Before Christmas is the last one.
Yeah, and then Frankie and Weenie is in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because Zero is the ghost of the dog.
So Tim Burton did not direct Coraline. Henry Selick did, but Henry Selick also directed Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right, I knew there was a connection.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
I didn't find Vincent really disturbing. I actually found it very funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny too.
With like how melodramatic.
Yes,
he is.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's these abrupt changes that shows the like very mundane life. especially like that moment when he's like freaking out about being isolated and being driven crazy by the house that he's in. And his,
yeah, and then his mom just shuts everything
his
down.
His mom just bursts in.
After like, she's like,
and she's after just like, she's it's a beautiful day. Outside.
It was more the fact that he wanted to electrocute his dog. I mean, that's how serial killers start, right? Is by going after the pets. And then it escalated to dipping the ant in wax. And I was like, it is House of Wax. This is how it begins.
Oh, no.
Well, that's what I wondered. Was it supposed to be funny?
I don't know. I don't think so necessarily, but
I think it was the kind of thing that that Tim Burton does a lot, where it kind of rides the line between humor and horror. You know, it's just kind of quirky in a way that's off.
Yeah, it's like charming in that it's like obviously there's this like bent toward the macabre, but like not necessarily. It's not like so overtly horrific. It's just like this horror thing can be fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, was that it? I mean, does Vincent grow up to be an actor? Or does he grow up to be Charles
He's
Mason?
Dead, right?
I think he died.
No, this is...
Right, the little boy.
The soul upon the floor would be lifted, nevermore.
He got disenfranchised of his imagination, and then he was dead.
Here's my real question. Is there a woman buried in his mother's garden?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, I hope that little boy wasn't married.
Yeah, right? He's 7 years old. Yeah. Married.
Married or alive.
I do remember reading at some point before I had seen Vincent that there was some connection to, at least in like possibility, between Corpse Bride and Vincent, because the main character who like looks very visually similar is Victor. And he did. So there is a dog in Corpse Bride. I looked it up, and his name is Scraps, though. Hmm. But they like find his bones when he goes down to the underworld and reanimate him.
Oh.
Very cute. But there's supposed to be apparently a connection between Vincent and Victor.
His bones went one place and his spirit went a different place.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think his mother thought knowing that her child like preferred to like sit in the dark and pretend to be Vincent's friend?
I've given this some thought, because she goes up there and her answer to everything is go outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, she never addresses the dog being electrocuted.
Yeah.
I think that was all in his imagination, though.
Yeah, he didn't actually kill the dog.
I feel like if it was in his thoughts.
If my kid was sitting around in the dark all the time, only read Edgar Allan Poe, and when he went outside, he was digging, looking for dead bodies, I'd be worried.
Or you could go the other way and like encourage it and be like, what else you got?
Yeah. Yeah. Like then introduce, you know, other authors. Be like, oh, have you read Poe? Have you heard of this person? Like, yeah, should be his horizons.
And who knows? Maybe he picks a different actor to want to be each week. And this week it was just Vincent. Last week it was Marilyn Monroe. And, yeah. You know.
And next week it's Nick Cage.
Yeah.
But she's just like,
really not gonna be happy then.
Go
she's
outside.
Just fed up. She's just fed up with it at this point.
Kid doesn't have video games also, so like that's a factor, you know. Like I did not see a GameCube in that bedroom.
Yeah. Oh, so that's a question. So it was made in the 80s, right? But when do you guys think it was set?
50s. That makes sense.
There was like this weird fascination with the 50s and the 80s. You know, you look at like
there was
especially when you look at like bands like the Stray Cats, and they had like a very 50s look, and there was like a sort of re-emergence of
50s style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like all those diners that got built in the 80s to look like they were from the 50s.
Also, I'm just going to give everybody the heads up. This is the 5-minute warning on this party segment. We are coming to the end of our 40 minutes on Zoom because I didn't pay for the upgrade.
Okay, well, does anybody have any final thoughts?
What if it wasn't his imagination and it was like his mom was lying?
And he actually had a bride and...
And a zombie dog.
My final thought is that I really wish Vincent Price would narrate my life. I think that would be really cool.
You probably have bad things happen in your life.
I would prefer if he didn't rhyme all the time. You know, like he could rhyme sometimes.
Like Dr. Seuss, but
no more rhymes, and I mean it.
Yeah.
So I just put this together right now that it kind of reminds me of some of the darker passages in Shel Silverstein's poems.
Whoa. Yeah.
It reminds them. In turn, reminds me of, is it Edward Gorey who makes those,
Yeah, he makes those kind of like gothic-ish.
Cautionary tales about children dying, yeah.
And that was a little bit before this, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I was thinking earlier, too, about the Addams Family, like how that used to be a newspaper comic, like, even before this was made, maybe when he was growing up, I wonder how many like secret little spooky goth things were just around in pop culture that just never really got the spotlight.
That's a good point. Because when was the Addams Family show? Was that in the 60s?
Yes.
Well, we saw the Munsters then as well.
Yeah, those started at the same time. Mm-hmm. So the comics were before then. Each other.
There was also Dark Shadows.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Which is on Amazon Prime, I think.
Dark Shadows?
Yeah, I almost started it last night.
It's hard to get through.
Is it?
We've got nothing but time.
Well, on that note, thank you everyone for being here again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
This is fun.
Yes. So I hope that y'all will join us for the next one, which will be Tim Burton's Hansel and Gretel.
Ooh. Oh, fun.
Whoa.
Wouldn't miss it.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening and for everyone who is keeping their communities safe by staying at home right now. And we will see you next time. Until then, return your videos here.
Woo!
Quarantine.
Bye.
Bye. Have a happy Pandy, everybody.
Oh, bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to our very first mini episode, Quarantine Style. Let us know what you think by following us on Instagram and shooting us a DM, or write us an email at memorystatic@gmail.com. This episode was edited by me, Bailey Moore, and music clips are composed by Cullen Moore. You can find his music by checking out Plaid Tuxedo at plaidtuxedo.com/music. Special thanks to Eric Dumig for sitting through the beginning, and to our Zoom party guests. We'll have the next one coming your way soon. Thank you again. We love you and stay safe out there.